You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
My name is Norma Smith, and I was born in Idaho Falls, Idaho, March 17th, 1939.
Norma Smith is a happy, bright, bubbly, and beautiful woman who loves her family more than anything else. She was raised in humble circumstances as a young girl before her mother remarried. She was an actress and attended Brigham Young University, where she met her now husband, Richard. Together, they have built a beautiful life and have four wonderful sons. She spent her life serving others, including on five missions with her husband. Her story begins in Idaho in 1939.
We lived in Blackfoot and lived there for just a short time, about a year and a half. And then my biological father decided that he didn't want to continue teaching school and decided to become a dentist. So we moved to California, Southern California, and we looked like the Beverly Hillbillies with all of our junk piled in an old car and drove down to LA. And he started dental school, and He was born with a heart condition, and so his father was a dentist and his grandfather was a dentist, and they said, well, why don't you go to dental school because that's less stress on you? Of course, we know now that dentistry is high stress. My father graduated, and 6 months later, he died of heart condition. He'd been in the hospital for 6 weeks, and it was 44, and they were sending penicillin to the troops. And so if he'd had penicillin, he would have survived. But my mother went to all the places trying to find penicillin, and it was all being shipped to the troops. So my mother was a widow, and she had worked all those years of his being a dental student and almost finishing his PhD in history. So she'd worked about 13 or 14 years of their life together and had to continue working. And we never saw her because she worked 6 days a week. And I remember coming home from school and calling her on the phone and checking in with her. And we'd tell her what we were going to do that day. But life was difficult because we were poor and we didn't have a mother that was there. And we lived downtown area, and I have a brother who is 5 years older and a sister who's 6 years older. My sister was in charge of all of us, and she would lock me in the closet when I cry, and I used to cry a lot. And my brother didn't know how to read when he was in the second grade. And so she'd come home from work at night, tired and had worked hard, and she taught him how to read in the second grade. That was quite an epic time for our family because always watching her teaching him all these things and she worked hard. And he was so talented and could do anything. And he used to carve things out of balsa wood. In those days, kids did things like that. And he had a chunk of balsa wood and he'd make a boat or he'd make a prairie schooner wagon and all the little details. He was very gifted and had a visual sense that was wonderful. And we had flat armed couch. And so he'd carve his things on top of the flat armed couch and he'd get in trouble. But she was extremely patient with him because he was creative and he wanted to do all these things. And he did a lot himself. But I remember listening to a program on Saturday mornings. Every Saturday mornings, we, the three of us, gathered in front of the radio and listening to Let's Pretend. And we'd listen to all the fairy tale stories and we loved it. And then we'd clean our little apartment. We had a little one-bedroom apartment and we had a Murphy bed. And so when my mother would come home, she'd pull down the Murphy bed that was in the living room. And we fixed for our food, because she wasn't there, we fixed cocoa and toast. So we had a very interesting life. I remember the ration books and how we collected the stamps. If you wanted butter or whatever during the World War, then you'd take the ration book down and you'd buy a big bag of white lard, and there was a little pinch color thing in there. And you'd pinch that and then you'd manipulate that plastic bag so that it would color all the lard yellow, so it would look like butter. That's what we did. We weren't eating butter, but it looked like butter. So, you know, they thought that was good. But my mother was very beautiful and quite popular. And she worked in a dental office that had some very famous people. A lot of movie stars came to that dental office, and she managed it. And so she met a lot of people that were interesting. And she also met a lot of people in the church who dated her. And she had lots of boyfriends during this time. So she dated this one man who was, his name was Byron Doan. And he was a speaker for UCLA as a speaker on religions. And so he had a panel of five women who were of different faiths and different ethnicities, and they traveled the United States, and they would speak in high schools or colleges to talk about what they believed. And he was the moderator of that. And I remember getting letters from him when he was traveling those 2 years throughout the United States. And we wanted our mother to marry him because we loved him and he loved us. And eventually they did get married and we were thrilled to death. And he was wonderful to us. And I remember once when I was associating with the circus people, and my mother found out, and she said to him, "You take her in the bedroom and you spank her and tell her she can never go with those people again." And I was learning how to do the trapeze and all these things. And after about half an hour, he came out with of the bedroom with me, and he said, "Don't you ever ask me to spank her again. I can't do that, and I won't." So that was one memory of my father being so kind and darling to us and wonderful. And so we had a wonderful life. Everybody knew G. Byron Doan, and they wanted him to speak everywhere. And so he had an assignment every Sunday. And sometimes he'd teach Sunday school, and sometimes he'd have a fireside and a sacrament meeting to speak to. So he had a little black book with his schedule booked for a year, and went all over Southern California. And so we're so proud of him, and we loved him, and he was good to us. And then we moved into a big old house, a craftsman house in Southern California that was built in the 20s. And it was in bad shape, and my mother was a doer, and so she fixed it all up and tore out walls and did all these things. And we loved living in that big old house. It was large and wonderful and lived in a nice neighborhood. And the Adams Ward was the first ward built in Southern California. So we went to that ward. And then when Mother married, we moved over to the Wilshire Ward. And it was a magnificent building. And it did not look like a Mormon church because our area decided we wanted a very nice ward that the Southern California could see that this was a Mormon church. And this is a big, beautiful, gorgeous ward. And it was gorgeous. We had underneath the stage, we had dressing rooms for plays and scout room. And we had a walk-in refrigerator. We had this big giant kitchen. We had room for thousands of people to meet in this beautiful ward. It had a wonderful choir loft, and the most famous conductor in the church used to direct the choir there in the choir loft. So that was a wonderful time. And my father taught one of the Sunday school classes, and the whole chapel and the balcony to the chapel were filled every Sunday to hear his lessons. And so it was kind of interesting to grow up in that ward.
In her younger years, Norma was a successful actress in plays at the Hale Theater and even had a speaking role in a film. But when she was 16, there were some troubling circumstances that led their family to move to Utah.
I was at risk in Southern California at 16, and Wilkinson was the president of BYU. And he'd been courting my father for several years, and they decided to take up Wilkinson's offers to come and teach at BYU. So we moved from that big old house to Provo, and it was a time when they were really expanding, and we couldn't find a house. And so my mother, who was very clever and could do anything, we moved into a house that hadn't been lived in years, and was a house that was built in, had 18-inch walls that was built 100 years before. So she worked for about 3 months and completely redid this old, horrible old house. And it was just charming, and people wanted to come through it. And my father in Southern California was the famous one. And then when they moved up to Provo, my mother became the famous one. Nobody knew his background. And so she was doing all these remodels, and the professor's wives, who were poor, would ask Edna Doan to help them redo their house. And so they go to the DI and get all the stuff from the DI and do all these things and wallpaper and learn to paint and do all these things. So they switch roles. Didn't bother my father at all because he was a very modest man, but he was really a great professor. I had a few classes from him.
It was during her time at BYU that Norma met Richard Smith, and he checked all the boxes.
I went to the Y for 3.5 years. I was going over with my cousin to eat at the cafeteria at the Y, and I looked across the cafeteria and I saw this man, and I said to my cousin, "Look at that guy over there. Isn't he fabulous?" She said, "Well, I guess." And, "Look at his arms. Look at his hands. I love his hands." Anyway, I said, "I've got to meet him." And you know, I was cute and could date most anybody, and I said, I've got to meet him. So anyway, I didn't notice he was with a good friend of mine, and they were eating together, and they saw us, and they came across the cafeteria and sat down at our table, and I got to meet Richard Smith. And I was very cool in how we were in those days, so stupid, but we double dated for homecoming with this friend, but I only wanted to date Richard. And so I finagled enough, and finally he stopped dating this girl that he'd been dating, and he asked me out, and I fell in love with him, and we went out for about 3 months, and he didn't ever kiss me. And I said to my friend, I said, "I'm going to stop dating him if he doesn't kiss me on this date." And he kissed me that date. He was this great young man. He was a person that I really respected, and there were 3 things I wanted to marry in a man. One was a returned missionary, and one was a dentist, and one was an Eagle Scout, because the scouting program was very big in our family. He had those qualities, and I think I was really in love with him. But I had gone down to California for Christmas and met another guy who had a wonderful voice, and he went to Yale Law School, and he sang with the Whippoorwills, which is a singing group at Yale. And he would sing me these love songs, and I was smitten by that. And so I went back after Christmas and was writing to this boy from Yale and still dating Richard. And I really was in love with him, but I wanted to make sure. So I told Richard I had to go to California to work for the summer so I could go down to have a date with this guy from singing in the Whippoorwills. And we went out. And I asked him what he was going to do for the summer. And he said, "We'll just spend the summer together. We'll have so much fun. We'll go to the beach. We'll do all these things." And I knew I couldn't marry a man whose mother was a widow, and he was going to play all summer with a girlfriend. And so the very next day, I got a ticket on the train to go back to Provo. Well, there was no reason to stay there any longer. That was kind of an interesting experience, because on the train, I met these 2 old ladies, and they said, "Well, what are you doing, dearie?" And I said, "I'm going back to get married. I've fallen in love with somebody, and I'm going to get married." And we talked about my wedding, and Richard hadn't even professed his love. I had decided I was in love with him. So I wrote him a letter. In those days, you didn't call boys, and said, "I'm here. I've decided to come back to Utah." And he came the day he got the letter, and he said, "Why didn't you call me? What a dumb thing to write a letter." I said, "Well, girls just don't do those things here." And so anyway, we started to date, and I knew I was in love with him early on, and told him, and he never said a word about love or anything, but we dated all summer long. And he said something about, "Well, let's wait a year," because he was going to dental school. And, "Well, let's wait a year because I have no money." And I said, "I know how it is to have no money. I grew up without any money. The wife works and we do these things." And he said, "Oh, I can't do that." So he said, "I think we ought to wait a year." And I said, "Okay, if that's the way you feel, I'm out." And so anyway, he changed his mind real quick, and we decided to get married at the end of the summer. And I had 6 weeks to get ready for my wedding and get everything planned and everything. But we got married in the Salt Lake Temple, and we were married by Spencer W. Kimball. And that was an experience that we will never forget. It was a marvelous thing, and told us a lot about what marriage was about. And he said, "You know, I know you're in love, but have children, and that's what your marriage is for." and gave us a lot of really sweet, wonderful advice. And so we felt very privileged to do that. Right after we were married, we left for dental school. We found a terrible old place to live, and I got a job, and we were very much in love and had 4 years of dental school, and we just had a marvelous time. And it's a marvelous thing to know that you can achieve things. You don't need money to accomplish these things. You know that you can, you're smart enough to earn a living and to do these things. And I knew that someday we would have money. We would be fine. And there was a little Mormon group of kids that were going to dental school, maybe about 10 couples. And we joined a little club together, got together and had wonderful times together. And so life was really fun. And one of his good friends at school nominated me for the Queen of the Ball 1 year. And I had to go as a mother of two little boys in front of all the men in the dental school and be voted on. And I got nominated as the queen. And so I had no money for a dress. And so I went down to downtown and bought this simple fabric that was heavy enough. And I designed my little dress and made it and wore it to the ball. And it looked quite nice. I still have it. And it's quite a cute dress. But I didn't even think about going to buy a dress because we didn't have the money for that. We decided, because we were old, I was 22 and he was 26, that we were real old. We decided we needed to have a baby right away. So after 3 months and I wasn't pregnant, I was sure that I was never going to be able to have a baby. And we came back to Utah as a surprise gift for my parents and his parents in December, you know, Christmas time. And I was pregnant at the time, but I didn't know. And I was so tired. I was just so exhausted. I didn't know why I was so tired, but I was pregnant at the time. So we had our first baby in September, Craig Condy Smith. And I was sick for about 8 of the 9 months I was pregnant, and decided that I didn't want to have another baby for a long time. And then had another baby a year and a half later. And our second boy is Blair Byron. And so we had these two little boys, Blair and Craig. And they were so cute. I had a good time with those two little kids.
Those two little boys were quite close in age, and they did everything together, including getting into some trouble.
In our apartment where we lived, I had a little cupboard outside in the little backyard that was like 10 by 10. And in that cupboard, I had all these poisons because I had different poisons for all the different bugs that we had in Kansas City. And one day I was vacuuming the house and I thought, I need to check and see what's going on in the backyard, in that little tiny backyard. Craig was nearly unconscious and he had gotten in the cupboard and taken the pirate pills. Those are pirate pills, Mom. And he'd taken several. And I didn't have a car. We were still poor. And I had no car. And I looked at that box to get an antidote and to call. And I couldn't see. My vision was blocked. I was crying and I couldn't see. And I dragged him outside. And we lived in a complex. And I started to yell. And I said, I need help. Help, please help me. And nobody came outside. And finally, after about 10 minutes, somebody came outside, and somebody lived all the way down the street in another apartment. And I said, my son has taken these poison pills, and can you take me to the hospital to have a stomach pumped? Well, she took him, and I stayed with Blair, and then realized that he could have taken them because he was too young to not know. And so I had to get another way to the hospital, and they had both their stomachs pumped. And the person that came to our rescue was an inactive Mormon who'd never been to church. And we became very good friends. And it was a kind of a neat experience because I felt like she was supposed to help me that day. And it was a wonderful friendship.
During these humble years, Norma and Richard worked so hard to provide for their new little family.
after I had the first baby, I decided to take care of children. So that's what I did to work. And Richard had a job in the post office, a pretty good job, and we did pretty well. And we also had a book that we put out in our senior year for the LDS dental students and all the places that they could shop. And so we made quite a bit of money selling that to the next guy in the next class that wanted to have all those contacts. And so we had a little bit of money to come home on, but we were still poor. So we finished dental school and decided that we would go to practice in California. My brother was a dentist and had graduated the year before, and so we decided to go to Anaheim, but it ended up not being a good fit. So we moved to the Valley in Southern California, and he opened up a dental office, and we actually built our own dental office after a few years. And so he was a very successful dentist there, very popular, and people would drive for distances to go to him because he was called the painless dentist, painless Dr. Smith. He has this gentle way about him, and so people really liked him, and so we did very well in our dental practice. So we lived in Westlake Village for 36 years, and he became bishop of the ward at one point, and then became the patriarch, and we loved living there. It was wonderful. About a year after we moved to California, we were living in Anaheim and decided to get pregnant again. And I had another boy. I was very sick during all four pregnancies, really sick. They had to take me to the hospital and give me injections, and it was very hard. My third child was Gregory, so it was about 2.5 years before we had our fourth.
Together, Norma and Richard raised four successful, wonderful boys who now have families of their own.
Craig was, as the oldest child, I think that he was an amazing kid, and he was a people person, real people person. And I realized that one day I was visiting people in a mall, and Craig was with me, and he was only about 10, and he asked the couple something about themselves. And a 10-year-old that was interested in someone's, what they were doing about something, I thought, this kid is going to love people the rest of his life. And he did. Blair, our second one, was a typical middle child. He is very sweet and soft and is a good person, and I respect him so much. But the thing he did a couple of years ago, he bought a bright red Lexus sports car. And I said, Blair, that's the best thing you ever did. And everybody in town knows who Blair Smith is because of his bright red sports car. But he is a good man. Gregory was a boy that could do anything. So I would say, Gregory, can you help me do this? Gregory, can you help me do that? So he is a kid that can do anything. He was doing his garage about 3 years ago, putting shelves in his garage, and he fell off the top of the ladder and broke both of his arms. And here he's a teacher, and he had both of his arms in slings, and he had to go teach his classes. But he can do anything. Bradley, the youngest one, was one of these sweet kids because he was the youngest one, and everybody doted on him and loved him. And he felt that extra love, I think, from everybody. He was a very dear guy and still is. We always have a tradition on Christmas Eve to have a Danish dinner because we're Danish. So we have that, and we have to do the Riis almond, the rice pudding with the whole almond in it. And if you get the whole almond and you don't chew it up, then you get the marzipan pig for that's good luck for the next year. We always had the tradition that the kids could do things like water ski, and we'd challenge them, can you water ski for half an hour without falling? They'd meet that challenge and do those things, and we pay them. I didn't believe in giving them an allowance, but that they would earn their money by doing things around the house, and they would earn money that way. They were in soccer, and they had piano lessons. And we decided we wanted our children to be exposed to everything, so we went to all the plays that came to California. So they all saw Annie and Phantom of the Opera and all those wonderful things. We really felt strongly about giving them experiences. We bought a boat and we went to Lake Powell a lot, and the kids learned to dive. And we had these vacations, wonderful vacations, going to see places. And they really had a wonderful life and had a lot of experiences. And so met life with confidence. And that's my greatest blessing in life, is that I married the right man. But we made sure that they did things. They weren't denied a lot of things. We're given lots of opportunities to grow.
I asked Norma if she had any good advice for raising all those boys.
I think maybe they could try the fifth time and have a baby girl. No, my advice is really is the church, is that's what keeps couples together. And always try to have family home evening and make the gospel a fun place to be.
Norma has really dedicated her life to the gospel. That was clearly evidenced by her and Richard serving 5 missions together to Indonesia, Cambodia, Malaysia, Russia, and the Conference Center.
We've been on 5 missions, including the conference mission. When Richard said, I think it's time for us to go on a mission, I said to somebody, oh, we'll get called to go to Indonesia or someplace like that. And we were called to Indonesia with all the bugs and all the earthquakes. They were having a lot of earthquakes. So what I decided, you know, you never say anything that you don't want to do, because it always happens that you do. So we went to Indonesia and had a marvelous experience. We were humanitarian missionaries, and so anytime they had a problem with a flood or fires, which they had a lot of terrible problems, we would go, and we got to bring clothes and put out fires and do things that with the stamp of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on the box. And we felt like such a blessing to be there to help people in times of need. And we collected clothes, and one time I gave a lot of stuff to the DI, of course, in my years. And one time we were doing a village that had a flood, and they didn't have clothes to wear. And so we were taking clothes, big, huge piles of clothes that we had to give out to the people that didn't have any clothes. And as we were pulling out some of those clothes, I saw a skirt. And I said, does that skirt have a kick pleat in the back? Yes. Does it have 3 buttons on the side? Yes. And I described the skirt that I had given to the DI in California. It had gotten to Salt Lake. They had sent that to Indonesia. And we were giving that skirt. That was my skirt. That was kind of a neat story. And I told everybody, and we all died laughing. We thought that was the funniest thing. And think that skirt ended up in Indonesia. But that was a great place, because they did need a lot of help in that way. And we're able to have lots of experiences giving. We weren't allowed to teach lessons or do proselyting, but that's what we mainly did, is went to people who were needing physical help. And we weren't allowed to leave our apartment for about 3 weeks because of 9/11. Finally, they said, go and buy all this food. But finally, they just said, they sent us out, because they just felt that we were a little in danger. We went to Singapore to wait for our next call. And we stayed there for a few weeks in the hotel together with all the rest of the missionaries. And our second mission was Cambodia. We taught the young people in the church, and we'd take them places. And so we learned a lot of the customs, because we couldn't do a lot of things. When we take the kids on a bus to the beach, they all wore their street clothes. They didn't have bathing suits. And they were all very modest and wonderful kids that we associated with. And our third mission was to Malaysia. And that was also a humanitarian mission. And so that was a neat experience there too, because we had a lot of needs that were there. So then on our fourth mission, we went to Russia. In fact, I said to somebody, we'll probably get called to Russia, and we did anything. So we taught classes, we volunteered for everything, and that was a neat experience. It was called Ekaterinburg, and it was at the base of the mountains there. We were about 5 hours by driving to Moscow, and so we got to go to Moscow a couple of times. We had some health problems and got to go to the clinic there, the good clinic in Moscow. And then we got to go to Finland. We loved Russia too. But the women prayed, babushkas were wonderful prayers, but they would pray for 5 minutes. So we got used to these long prayers, and they were wonderful people. It was mostly women in Russia that joined the church, not too many men. And in the last part of our mission, we were called by the area people, and they said, we have now been told that you cannot send pictures home, you cannot put your names of your family, you cannot teach the gospel in the streets, or there were all these conditions because they were watching us. And so they were afraid for our safety. So we had a lot of conditions, but loved it.
Norma and Richard's fifth mission was to the conference center, where they served as ushers.
Well, we served there for 3 years, and that was really fun because we got to see a lot of people. We got to take them to their seats, and we got to watch conferences, and we got to watch President Nelson be sustained. That was a neat experience, and we just had some wonderful experiences there, and we worked with a group of about 10 or 12 couples, and we got together and got to be good friends with them and had times that we partied together. We served for 3 years, but I would have loved to have served a little longer. My fun and growth and enlightenment and understanding of the church has grown because I've been able to go on these missions. And I've seen a few people in the conference center when we've been serving from Indonesia and Cambodia, and it was such a thrill when we hugged and kissed like we were family. And we feel that way. We feel like these people that we served and worked with, and they helped us with everything. And they were so kind to us. Just feel like I'm a real blessed person because I've had these experiences. And I was threatened by my sister. She said, if you go on another mission, I won't like you. And anyway, we didn't go on another mission. And she just passed away two weeks ago, and I had thought about, I talked to Richard about going on another mission, and I'm so glad we hadn't, because we could have been gone when she died, and I couldn't spare that. I would have had to have come home from my mission to see her off on her journey. I was thinking as I set the table for Thanksgiving dinner, there were only 14 of us that came, and sometimes there are more. And I thought, how lucky I am to be living close enough to have 14 people come to dinner. And so really, that's more important to me than anything. I loved the connection I've had with my grandchildren, and I love my friends, and I love doing things with them. But having family to watch grow in the gospel, to watch do wonderful things, to watch learning, to watch trials, lots of trials with our family. And I don't know what I would have been or done without family. I couldn't live without the church. I couldn't live without the gospel. I couldn't live without the organization. What would be our purpose in life? Because I know that this is true. I know this is the plan. I know that this is what makes me happy. I wouldn't be happy without the gospel. I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world. Sometimes I have a grumpy husband, and sometimes I'm grumpy, but we can always get back because of the gospel. And so I don't know why the Lord has blessed me with so many blessings, but I just feel like He's blessed me beyond understanding.
As you've heard, Norma has lived such a selfless, service-focused, happy, and blessed life. She has an adoring family and attributes all of her many blessings to the Lord and her faith. A huge thank you to the Smith family for purchasing this episode and to Norma for letting me interview her. If there's someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website at hearingourheritage.com.